Tukoti Vaishnav Rinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridasa Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Gangamaya Jumuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nivasesa Sinyavadi Paskatya De Satarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Guru and Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Bitam Sam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Bitamscha Vanchakalpa Jubyastra Kipasan Vyavata Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevi Namo Namaha. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
December 30th, 2020, class in Hawaii over the internet, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 24, chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, text 12. Vibhuda Sura Gandharva.
Vibhuda Sura Gandharva.
Muni Siddha Naroragaha. Vijita Surya Ya Dikshu. Kvana Yantyai Vanu Purai. Please. Learned.
Learned.
Asura.
Asura.
The demons.
Demons.
Gandharva.
Gandharva.
The denizens of Gandharva Loka.
Muni.
Great sages.
Siddha.
The denizens of Siddha Loka. Nada. The inhabitants of the earthly planets. Uragaha. Denizens of Nagaloka. Vijitaha. Captivated. Suryaya.
By the new bride.
Dikshu. In all directions.
In all directions.
Kvana Yantya.
Kvana Yantya.
Tinkling.
Tinkling.
Eva.
Eva.
Only.
Only.
Nupurai.
Nupurai.
By her ankle bells.
By her ankle bells.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. When Shataduti was thus being married, the demons, the denizens of Gandharva Loka, the great sages, the denizens of Siddha Loka, the earthly planets, and Nagaloka, although highly exalted, were all captivated by the tinkling of her ankle bells. Purport. Generally, a woman becomes more beautiful when, after an early marriage, she gives birth to a child. To give birth to a child is the natural function of a woman. and therefore a woman becomes more and more beautiful as she gives birth to one child after another. In the case of Shatadutti, however, she was so beautiful that she attracted the whole universe at her marriage ceremony. Indeed, she attracted all the learned and exalted demigods simply by the tinkling of her ankle bells. This indicates that all the demigods wanted to see her beauty completely, but they were not able to see it because she was fully dressed and covered with ornaments. Since they could only see the feet of Shatadutti, they became attracted by her ankle bells, which tinkled as she walked. In other words, the demigods became captivated by her simply by hearing the tinkling of her ankle bells. They did not have to see her complete beauty. It is sometimes understood that a person becomes lusty thus just by hearing the tinkling of bangles on the hands of women or the tinkling of ankle bells or just by seeing a woman's sari. Thus it is concluded that woman is the complete representation of Maya. Although Viswamitra Muni was engaged in practicing mystic yoga with closed eyes, his transcendental meditation was broken when he heard the tinkling of bangles on the hands of Menaka. In this way, Viswamitra Muni became a victim of Menaka and fathered a child who was universally celebrated as Shakuntala. The conclusion is that no one can save himself from the attraction of woman, even though he be an exalted demigod or the inhabitant of the higher planets. Only a devotee of the Lord who is attracted by Krishna can escape the lures of woman. Once one is attracted by Krishna, the illusory energy of the world cannot attract him. Vibhudasura Gandharva Muni Sira Naro Ragaha Vijita Suryaya Dikshu Kvanayantaiva Nupurai. When Shatadutti was thus being married, the demons, the denizens of Gandharva Loka, the great sages, the denizens of Siddha Loka, the earthly planets, and Naga Loka, although highly exalted, were all captivated by the tinkling of her ankle bells. So we are all attracted by beauty. Beauty is one of the six opulences, and it is very attractive. All the opulences are attracted. We're attracted by wealth, we're attracted by knowledge, we're attracted by renunciation. But we're all certainly attracted by beauty. People pay a lot of money and go through a lot of trouble to see beautiful things, whether it's other beautiful human beings or beautiful animals, beautiful birds, beautiful landscapes, beautiful sunsets. I've always wanted to see the Northern Lights. One time I saw a little bit when I was in an airplane and we flew over the North Pole, but it's so beautiful. I'd like to go see something so beautiful. Right? So people have this desire. We all naturally have this desire because Krishna is the most beautiful, and we all, as a soul, want to see something that's beautiful. We want to appreciate beauty and enjoy beauty. So Prabhupada first talks about material beauty, that we become beautiful when we are situated according to our natural function. And Prabhupada's speaking about this in a very basic biological way. But there is a deeper level at which beauty is achieved when we are in our natural situation, not just in terms of the laws of nature. Prabhupada would sometimes make a equivalence between the laws of nature and the laws of God. So we are all beautiful when we are acting according to the laws of nature, but we're even more beautiful when we're acting not just according to God's laws in nature, but when we're acting according to God's spiritual laws. And when we are attracted to the real beauty of Krishna, then we can appreciate all beauty. Srila Prabhupada's appreciative of womanly beauty in this purport, without being attracted to it separately. So first, Prabhupada's making a point about that beauty is achieved when one is in a natural position. And we all know that when we're in a position that fits us, we're happier. And certainly people are more beautiful when they're happier. We can think of the story of Gajendra. Gajendra was out of his element. He was out of his natural position. And therefore he was in distress. Yes? And again, we all have that experience. If I'm in a situation that doesn't fit me, that doesn't suit me, I feel distress. When I'm in a situation that suits me, then I feel happy. I mean, here Srila Prabhupada's talking about just physical attractiveness. And in those days, I mean, actually until maybe 100 years ago or less than that, and really up until World War II, people used to get married very young. I mean, it wasn't just the girls. Everybody was marrying young. Mahaprabhu was 14 when he married. Bhaktivinoda was 14 when he married. Gandhi was 13 when he married. And so people were getting married in, you know, by early to mid teens. As soon as a person was physically mature enough to have a child, they were getting married. And this was to prevent illicit sex in society and make sure that people were satisfied. In modern society, most of the problems in modern society are caused by single men and women, of course, especially single men. Most of the crimes in society, the vandalism and so forth, is caused by people who are not properly married when they're young. And then, of course, it's not that people are not, it's not that people are celibate, that there's so many children born out of marriage, and then there's, you know, abortion, and so much single parenting, and poverty, and so forth and so on. But it used to be that people were married at a very young age. And here Prabhupada is saying that when the girl is old enough to be married, she's not yet fully beautiful. And that having a child has her exhibit her full beauty. You know, according to biology, when a very young woman would get pregnant, so the pregnancy would make her body mature in a very beautiful way. And Prabhupada says that the woman becomes more beautiful as she has one child after another. And this is probably not a very politically correct statement in 2020, that people don't think that, oh, well, you know, the woman who has 10 children or 15 children or 20 children is more beautiful than the woman who has no children or who only has one child. But we see it practically. I mean, I know of families where the woman has had many children and her beauty has indeed increased with each child, both her physiological beauty and her emotional, mental beauty. Now, a lot of times women will object and say, you know, I'm not a baby-making machine. And, you know, when you think about it, it's like, I think your body is actually a baby-making machine. The female body in most species is, not among the seahorses, but in most species, the female body is indeed a baby-making machine. It's one of the main ways that demarcates the female body from the male body, that the female body is, in fact, designed to produce the young to continue the species. That is, it is a machine, and that's one of its functions, if it goes according to nature. I think when women object to that, they mean, I'm not only a baby-making machine, and I believe they're saying that because, first of all, the body is capable of much more than just making babies. That's not its only function. And second of all, we're not our body. There's also the mind, and then there's ultimately the soul. And so when a person says, I'm not a baby-making machine, I take it that they're simply saying, I'm not simply the body, and I'm not simply one function of the body. But that is a primary function of the body, and as a body acts according to its function, it becomes more and more beautiful. It becomes more and more attractive. And I think all of us have noticed how beautiful it is to see the young mother with the young child and the love between the young mother and the young child. What a beautiful, heartwarming scene that is. How attractive it is. And this is, again, it's true across the board. When something is in its natural environment, when something is allowed to demonstrate its own nature, it is beautiful. And that's true even if its nature may appear to be something negative. You know, even if we think about mosquitoes and viruses and snakes and whatever, they all have their place. They have their place in the universe. They have their place in the planet. They have their niche in the ecosystem. There's a very well-known video, it's not very long, about what happened when wolves were reintroduced to Yellowstone, one of the national parks in the United States, and how for a long time they had kept wolves out of the park. And at a certain point, the government deliberately reintroduced wolves into the park. The video is, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes. And it describes how the whole ecosystem of the park changed. The flows of the rivers, the growth of the trees, everything changed because of having this apex predator back in the park. So we might say, well, you know, wolves are horrible carnivorous predators that, you know, pounce on the baby deer and tear them with their fangs and eat their flesh raw, and how is that beautiful? But when they're doing their natural function, they actually, really, literally contribute to the beauty of the world. So everything is meant to be like that. But our natural function is, of course, well, we'll talk a little bit more about women before we go to the spiritual. So Prabhupada says here that even though Shatadruti was very young, that she wasn't a fully mature woman, that still she was so beautiful, that and she was a fully, she was fully dressed, she was dressed and decorated so much that practically the only part of her body that was clearly visible were her feet, on which there were ankle bells. And although she was not yet mature, although she had not yet come to exhibit her natural function in the world, and although she was covered, she was still so beautiful that she attracted everyone. We have this whole list, you know, all the human beings, the demons, the Gandharvas, the snakes, everybody was just very attracted by her. And Prabhupada says here that the woman is the full representation of Maya. Woman is the complete representation of Maya. So again, a lot of people may object to this characterization, but just a little reflection shows us that in society, if you want to sell something, you connect it with a beautiful woman. This is just the way it is. You know, that beautiful young women are used to sell everything from, you know, laundry powder to cars to toothpaste to shoes to, you know, anything you want to sell. If you have some beautiful young woman that's connected with it, that, you know, somehow emotionally, mentally you connect with that thing, you're more likely to buy it. And that's true for both men and women. Men and women are both more likely to buy something if some beautiful young woman is associated with it. And why is that? Because the woman represents the material energy, prakriti. When we say that the fall down of the living entity is in wanting to become God, what we mean by that is that we want to be the Purusha, we want to be the enjoyer of prakriti. We want to be the controller of nature. We want to be the controller of the opulences. All of the opulences are manifestations of Lakshmi Devi, who becomes, of course, for us Durga when we try to be her master. And so the womanly beauty represents the whole material creation, a Durga Devi. And we want to be the master or the controller. And we want to do that if we have a male form in this life, then we want to do that by owning a wife or a girlfriend, or maybe a wife and a girlfriend, or maybe 20 girlfriends, or whatever. And if in this life we have the form of a woman, we want to control Maya by being Maya. We think that if I am myself Maya, I can control the world. And, you know, it's a different flavor if you want to control the world from the point of view of a male body, or you want to control the world from the point of view of a female body. But the basic principle is the same, that you want to master Maya, and either by owning a woman or by being Prakriti. So this is this concept that a woman represents, especially a beautiful young woman, represents materialism, it symbolizes materialism, is something that every ad agency knows, you know. Every movie producer knows, you know, if they have some beautiful young woman in a starring role, people are more likely to watch the movie. I mean, this is not some kind of a, you know, esoteric or mystical understanding. It's pretty obvious. So when we see beauty from its separate from its natural function, that is illusion. Because ultimately our natural function is not just in terms of biology, and is not just in terms of the law of nature. So our natural function is not just whether we have, you know, a lot of children, or whether we act according to our particular propensity. That's that's not all that there is to it. You could have an atheistic society where everybody acted according to their propensity, where people who were inclined to be scholars were scholars, and people who were inclined to be warriors were warriors, and people who were inclined to be farmers were farmers, etc. And it still wouldn't be acting according to our natural place. Because ultimately our natural place is in connection with the Lord, not just in connection with Prakriti separate from the Lord. So for a woman really to be beautiful, she has to not only be having children, but be raising those children in consciousness of the Lord. You know, there has to be that other step of being connected with the Lord. That's real beauty. And even somebody who materially is not very beautiful appears beautiful when they're in connection with the Lord. I mean, I think we've seen this even materially. You can meet somebody who technically is beautiful. They have a very, you know, there are certain ways you can gauge and measure beauty. But if the person isn't a pleasant person, have we met people like that? You know, I have. I remember meeting this one woman who was physically strikingly beautiful. I mean, absolutely strikingly beautiful in face and figure. Everything about her physically was really, really striking. But after I got to know her for maybe a week or two, I could no longer understand how it was that my first impression was that she was beautiful, because her character was very negative. Her character was very selfish and very mean and very coarse. I had a very stark experience of this when we lived on 57th Street in New York, near the old 55th Street Temple, and there was a laundromat in the basement of the building. And sometimes I would see these young women getting in the elevator on the ground floor and going down to the laundromat. And if I'd listened to their talk, they were all young women, and they were all attractive women. But their speech was very coarse and harsh, and it was, they sounded very hardened. And then one point when I went down to do my laundry, I saw that at the end of the corridor, a door opened and there was some kind of a bar there. There was some place where people were selling liquor and women were dancing, and I could understand that it was a brothel. It was a house of prostitution that was taking place illegally in the basement, and these women I had seen going down there were the prostitutes. So although technically speaking they were physically attractive, their speech and their mannerisms and their vibe, you could say, was very harsh. And so you didn't actually see them as attractive. I mean, as soon as they opened their mouth, or even a lot of their body language and their facial expressions, were extremely off-putting. They were very, very unattractive. Yes, and we've all had experience of meeting someone who was technically, physically unattractive, but their personality was so lovely that after a while we're like, how could I have thought of that person as unattractive? You know, it becomes impossible to see them as unattractive. You may not think that they were gorgeous, but you would still say, oh, well, the person becomes pleasant to look at because of the nature of their character. And I've had that experience. I've had experience of meeting people, and when I first met them, I thought, oh, you're really unfortunate to be so ugly. What bad karma you have to be so ugly. And I was feeling some compassion. And after I got to know the person was so wonderful in their character and their behavior, again, they no longer appeared to me after a week or two as ugly. Now, what to speak of when a person is related to Krishna or anything? When anything in this world is acting in its natural function in relation to Krishna, even we think about Jatayu. You know, Jatayu is a vulture, and vultures are definitely, I think we can all agree that vultures are among the ugliest of birds. You know, there are beautiful birds, peacocks and cockatoos and so forth, and hummingbirds, but, you know, eagles even, and hawks. But vultures, nobody's going to say that a vulture is an attractive bird. But because Jatayu was in relationship with Ram, he's beautiful. He's a beautiful Vaishnava. right? The monkeys, the servants of Lord Ramachandra, they're so beautiful. I mean, Hanuman is gorgeous. The monkeys that are in Krishna's Leela. And again, we don't think of monkeys. It's an insult, like Krishna's insulting Jarati, you know, you're going to marry the king of the monkeys because you're so ugly. So, you know, if we say, oh, somebody looks like a monkey, it's insulting. But the monkeys who are pure devotees, they're beautiful. So the ultimate beauty is not just doing our biologically natural function, but the ultimate beauty is doing our spiritually natural function. When we are spiritually connected with the Lord, then our real beauty is there regardless of whatever insufficiencies there may be according to our body. And therefore we say that the pure devotee is not judged by a diseased or infirm body. You know, and we know devotees who are diseased or infirmed or crippled or whatever, but because they're full of spiritual potency, they're beautiful. They're beautiful. They're sitting on the Vyasasana and we're able to look at them speaking, even though on a material level they may be repulsive. But because they're full of that connection with Krishna, they're not repulsive at all. They're actually attractive. This is the glory of being in connection with Krishna. So if we can understand that on a material level, beauty has to do with being really who we are and who we're meant to be, then how much more so is that on a spiritual level? Because on the material level, who we are and who we're meant to be is very superficial. It's talking about the machine of the body, or it's talking about the machine of the mind in a temporary way. So what to speak of if it's a deep connection? Then Prabhupada ends by saying that when we're attracted to Krishna, we're not going to be attracted to mundane beauty. Even though we have this whole list, you know, the demon, the learned, Vibhudha, Asura, the demons. So the very learned people and the demoniac people, the Gandharvas, the Munis, the great sages, the Siddhas, the humans, the Nagas, they were all Vijitaha. They were conquered. It's like the word Jai, victory. They're just defeated. They're all defeated by this woman's jewels, this young, fully dressed woman's beauty. They're just defeated. But if we're attached to Krishna's beauty, then we're not going to be defeated by the beauty of his energy seen separately from him. And again, I think this is a very easy thing to understand. I may be attracted by some item. Maybe I'm attracted, I don't know, by a phone or a computer or a dress or a pair of shoes or something. But if that thing belongs to someone that I love, I'm not going to feel attracted by it. Isn't that a fact? Right? Let's say my own computer is breaking and I need a new computer, and I see a computer and I think, oh, that's the kind of computer I would like, and I understand that belongs to a friend, it belongs to someone I love, then I'm not envious of it. I'm just happy, oh, my friend has such a nice computer. And we can, again, we can all understand this, right? If we see our friend has a very handsome, loving husband, then we're just happy. Our friend has this nice husband, or our friend has this nice wife, or our friend has this nice children, or a nice house, or car, or, you know, whatever we might want. Right? If it's someone that we love, we don't feel envy. If it's someone that we love, that we care about, then we're happy for their happiness. Of course, in the material world, these things may be mixed, but we can have some idea that if I have love for the person, then I don't have an attraction to enjoying the opulence of that person separate from them. Yes? Just like if there's someone we love, they may have the passwords to our bank account, right? And we're not worried that the person is going to be stealing the money, because they're not attracted to those opulences separate from us, isn't it? Right? So I had, when I canceled all my flights in March, so I got a credit for flight, and my grandson-in-law needs to travel somewhere, and I said, you know, you can use my credit for flight. So in order to do that, I was out yesterday, so to do that, they had to log into my account with the airline. But they're not trying to take the things from my account because they love me, right? They're not attracted to what's there separate from me. So in the same way, when I'm attracted to Krishna, I'm not going to be attracted to try to enjoy the beauty of the world separately from Krishna. It actually will be disgusting. You know, it will be absolutely disgusting. Like sometimes, you know, a person will say, oh, you know, that my friend's wife was flirting with me, but I felt revolted. You know, how can... And it's like that. You know, when the Lord's energy beckons us, come and enjoy me, if I love the Lord, then we're revolted by the idea of enjoying the Lord's energy separate from the Lord. It's like, well, you belong to Krishna. Why would I want to take something that's Krishna's and enjoy it separately? You know, I have love for my friend. I have loyalty to my friend. And we actually feel repelled by such an idea of enjoying separately from Krishna. You know, but that doesn't mean we don't have appreciation. I mean, Srila Prabhupada's writing in this purport, appreciation for the beauty of women, the beauty of motherhood. There's a time when Prabhupada was meeting with some devotees and guests, and one of the guests was a young, attractive woman, and Prabhupada said to her, "You are very beautiful. You should use your beauty for Krishna." You know, we have devotees who've used their beauty for Krishna, who've, you know, they were famous fashion models or whatever, and they use that as a preaching means. So Srila Prabhupada was aware that the young woman in his room was beautiful. It's not that he wasn't aware, and he was appreciative. Hey, there's a really funny conversation where Prabhupada's with some devotees in Bengal, and Prabhupada said, the Bengali women are the most beautiful with their dark hair and their dark eyes. And one of the devotees says, Krishna has dark hair and dark eyes. And Prabhupada laughed. And he says, we are talking about, I'm paraphrasing, we're talking about mundane things and you're bringing it to Krishna. That is very nice. So Srila Prabhupada would appreciate the devotees. You know, Prabhupada actually says, if we don't appreciate the beauty of the world, then we're depressing Krishna. He said, like if you go to a garden and you walk in the garden and say, oh, everything's false. He said, you'll be depressing to the gardener. He said, so don't depress Krishna and tell him that the world is all false. And that the world is all, it's all false and meaningless and ugly. But we see it in relationship to Krishna. Oh, wow, Krishna, your energy is wonderful. Don't we like that? I mean, if somebody is grateful and appreciative of something that I've created. Oh, Urmila, you know, that thing you did is very beautiful, or that thing is very clever, or, you know, I feel good. I feel acknowledged. So Krishna also wants to feel acknowledged. How many beautiful things you've created. And then what does Krishna say? That all glorious, opulent things that you find in this world, they're just a spark of my splendor. They're just a little spark, so, you know, we see the gorgeous mountain with the sunrise reflecting on it, and the glacial river and the swans and the glacial river at the feet of this majestic mountain with the sun on it, and so forth, and, you know, the beautiful deer and maybe the beautiful people and so many things. That's just a spark. How great is my Lord? How great is my Lord? So this is the mood of the devotee. The mood of the devotee is they're attracted, as Prabhupada talks about in the story of Jambavan, they don't just praise the brain of the scientist, they praise the brain of the person who created the brain of the scientist. You know, if one little jiva woman is so beautiful that all these different great people, they're bewildered by her feet, then how beautiful must the creator be? How beautiful must the source be? How beautiful must his feet be? I mean, they're all attracted by this very young woman's feet and her ankle bells. How beautiful must the feet and the ankle bells of Krishna be? I mean, we're talking here, this is a jiva, and this is a jiva who's young. So once she gets to be, you know, 90, nobody's going to be falling out of their airplanes for her feet. And then once the body's dead, you know, it's just a pile of ashes. And nobody's going to be interested. So how interesting are the feet of Krishna, which are eternal? They're eternally soft. Krishna's eternally young, Navayovanam cha. And Krishna's always dancing. with his ankle bells. And as the, just like our traditional Indian dancers, so they have bells on their feet, so when they stamp their feet, it makes some sound. Yes, yeah, so when Krishna is walking, his footprints are there in the dust of Vrindavana, and the sound of his bells are there as he's walking. And of course, Krishna doesn't just walk. Every step is like a dance. So just Krishna's walking, his walking is so beautiful. Madhuram, it's very sweet. Just his gait is said to be like that of a baby elephant. And so Krishna has this gait like that of a baby elephant. And his walking is just like dancing. And then, of course, as he's walking through Vrindavan, he often stops and dances. So he'll get together with the cowherd boys and dance. And the Bhagavatam describes sometimes he's dancing with the peacocks. So the peacocks, we've all seen peacocks dancing. So the peacocks are dancing, and Krishna's dancing like a peacock, kind of a funny sort of dance. Shivara Swami said, kind of like break dancing or something. You know, he's dancing like a peacock. And they'll be dancing like imitating the monkeys. And then, of course, Krishna's doing the Rasalila with the young girls. Such a beautiful dance beyond. I mean, if we just take incredibly beautiful dancing we see in this world and multiply it billions and billions of times. Krishna's dancing on the heads of Kaliya in the water on the slippery snake's head while the snake is spewing fire, and the reddish bottoms of Krishna's feet are conquering the beauty of the red jewels on the heads of the snakes. And so we can be attracted by those feet, and when we're attracted by those feet, we can appreciate Shatadruti's feet and appreciate her ankle bells. Nupurai, we can appreciate her ankle bells as Krishna's creation. As Krishna's creation. Like Srila Prabhupada wrote it in one letter, that all the ladies in the Krishna consciousness movement, and most of us were very young at the time, that the men should see them as gopis. They should see, oh, these are Krishna's gopis, for Krishna's enjoyment, for Krishna's pleasure. So if we see that everything is there, if for Krishna's pleasure, everything is there as Krishna's energy, and that's its natural place, and that's its natural beauty, even if that person or that animal or whatever is not themselves conscious of acting in their natural place in relation to Krishna, if we can see, oh, that's how that mosquito is related to Krishna, that's how that tree is related to Krishna. Premanjana charita bhakti vilochanena santa sadaiva hridayeshu vilokayanti yam shyama sundaram achintya guna swarupam. If we can see that, then we can enjoy the beauty of this world. We can enjoy the beauty of everything. Everything becomes happy in relationship to Krishna, in a consciousness of Krishna. Now, having said that, we should just end with a little compassion, that while it's a fact that when we have this consciousness of Krishna, we are not going to be attracted by the things of this world, generally achieving that consciousness is a gradual process. It's not that just because we start our Krishna conscious journey and we take some vows and we're chanting that can be, but generally it's not immediate that we see everything in that way. And so therefore Prabhupada says, the conclusion is that no one can save himself from the attraction of woman, even though he be an exalted demigod or inhabitant of the higher planets. So we shouldn't be surprised, we should actually expect, that even people on the spiritual path are going to end up being attracted to Krishna's energy separate from Krishna. It's something that is to be expected. It happens to even the greatest personalities in this universe. So as Prabhupada said, you shouldn't be surprised at who leaves, you should be surprised at who stays. So if people struggle, you know, and for some people, obviously, their attraction isn't going to be literally to women, it will be to something else. But whatever a person is attracted to in this world, prakriti, let's say woman in a broad philosophical sense of prakriti, the fact that conditioned souls have a long-standing habit of being attracted to prakriti separate from Krishna is to be expected. And therefore, Krishna says, apichet sucharacharo, that even if the devotee has some fall down, interestingly enough, it's not the devotee who falls that's condemned. It's the person who criticizes the devotee who falls that's condemned. So we need to be kind and compassionate there, but for the grace of God go I. We should be humble enough to see that we all have our attractions to Maya, maybe different from somebody else, maybe more subtle than somebody else. And to be compassionate, upon ourselves, we're still attracted by this glitter that's been attracting us for so many billions of lifetimes, and we should be compassionate upon others. At the same time, compassion isn't an excuse for just wallowing in our material attachments, but we should be actively working. Our sadhana bhakti is an active, intentional, Prabhupada says we need to force the mind to think of Krishna. It should be an actual, intentional, repeated attempt to become absorbed in Krishna's beauty. And because Krishna's beauty is really nice, it's not that hard. All right, questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
Dharma, towards the end of your talk, you said something that really struck out at me. And you were talking about apichet sudracharo, that someone
yes.
may fall down for whatever reason. And you were saying, more condemned, we don't really condemn that person because Krishna doesn't.
Correct.
But the person who condemns that person, they're condemned.
Yes.
It seems that's one of the real weaknesses in our society. I was
yes.
wondering if you could speak more on that subject, please.
Well, that was kind of a side. I didn't want that to be the main focus of the class.
But it's just something that jumped at me. I understand.
It is something... something that's a real problem, that we don't notice that what Krishna is saying in 9:30 and Prabhupada in his purport is that the person condemning those who fall, they're the ones who are in trouble much more than the one who falls. Because falling is to be expected. Just like the devotees one time said to Krishna, to Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, sometimes we fall into Maya. And Prabhupada said, you're always in Maya. Sometimes you fall into Krishna. You know, it's... even if we're very proud that we haven't had some sort of a, you know, sexual fall down, haven't we had any kind of fall down? Have we ever defended our ego when somebody criticized us instead of taking a humble position? That's a kind of fall down. You know, I mean, have we ever envied a devotee? Who hasn't fallen down in some way or another over and over and over and over and over again? Like Jesus said, you know, we just had Christmas, those who are without sin throw the first stone. I mean, just because someone else's fall down is different from mine, you know, we're falling into illusion constantly. And so to criticize someone for some fall down that's more obvious or more gross, I mean, it's an incredible pride and arrogance and lack of compassion. And it's, we have to remember that these fall downs are temporary. They're, you know, just like today I was, right before this class, I was helping one of our Bhakti Shastri students. So on his last exam, he didn't do as well as he would like, and so he asked me to go over and help him to understand the questions and how he could improve. So I'm not going to say to him, oh, well, you didn't do well on your test, so you're just condemned. That's crazy. I'm going to say, oh, you know, you didn't do well on your test and you want some help, so let's work on it. You know, let's work on it so that you'll do better for the next test. I mean, it's this concept of condemning people who fail the little quizzes and the little tests in life here and there. What do they say? You can lose the battle but win the war? And it's a terrible thing, you know, in the name of ethics and morality and all this kind of stuff. That's not an excuse for any of us to engage in grossly sinful or criminal activities. You know, that's sinning on the strength of chanting. So we shouldn't excuse our own sinful activities. We shouldn't engage in criminal activities. We should keep the vows that we've made. But when we find ourselves getting attracted to Maya in one form or another, depending on our personal weaknesses, you know, be compassionate on ourselves, pick ourselves up, dust ourselves up, and go on, and be compassionate to others. You know, if they keep chanting Hare Krishna, they will pick themselves up and go on, and that's just like little babies learning how to walk. I mean, I've got a great-grandson who's, I guess he's about 9 or 10 months old, and he's crawling, he's trying, you know, he's starting to stand up and trying to walk, and he's always getting bruises from falling. You know, and you're not going to say, oh, you terrible baby. Why are you getting bruises? So Ramanan has a question about the Nagas being attracted to Shatadudi. Nagas are not just snakes. They also have a human-type form. They can switch from human to snake, and they can be half-human, half-snake. So they're mystical beings. And Mahalakshmi has a question, how do you see a mosquito related to Krishna in a beautiful way? Well, they have their function in society. You know, the mosquito spreads disease. The disease calls out the weaker members of the animal kingdom and the human kingdom. That's also there. The mosquitoes are also food for a lot of living entities. So they're part of the food chain. So they have their role in the world. It's not that if we got rid of all the mosquitoes that, you know, sometimes you get rid of a species and all kinds of catastrophes happen. How to see the cold in a beautiful way related to Krishna? Well, climates that don't have cold have a lot more diseases. The tropical climates, because there's no point at which the diseases are killed. So the cold actually kills off a lot of the noxious diseases. And you can remember in the cold the fight between the Shivajwara and the Narayanajwara. So the Shivajwara was extreme heat and the Narayanajwara was extreme cold. And the extreme cold won the battle. And if you remember this fight between the Shivajwara and the Narayanajwara, you'll never be defeated by any enemies. So anything else?
True about the cold weather. It's some difficulties I was experiencing in my health while in Mayapur. Now they are gone. So, and it's very cold here.
What's gone?
Some health difficulties I was experiencing in Mayapur, which is so hot, are gone now that I am living in a place which is very cold.
Yeah, well, it's probably also that your particular body is probably more suited to a temperate climate. You know, your body probably isn't as suited to a tropical climate. But yeah, definitely the cold kills off a lot of bugs and diseases for plants and for animals and for humans. It allows also a lot of the living entities to rest.
I had a question.
Yes.
When we think about detachment, we're not interested, but for myself, it seems like I have a philosophical detachment. It's not real detachment, but I know enough that not to dwell on the objects of the senses, so wherever the mind wanders, you bring it back. But it just, I don't know if it's artificial. I call it philosophical detachment, that at least I know what the mind doesn't, you know, can see and say, okay, I'll stop introducing different temptations to you. That still continues to go. And I'm always thinking that maybe at some time I'll be detached from it, but as far as I can see, it's just a philosophical detachment.
Well, that's the detachment that comes from Gyan Yoga. So in Gyan Yoga, which is, of course, included in bhakti, one gets detachment through philosophy and through mental tricks for detachment, where just like there are certain foods that I know if I eat them that I won't feel very good later. And so, like chocolate, I know that if I eat chocolate, I'll get a stomachache. It doesn't suit me. So it's not that I have no attraction for chocolate. I grew up as a child eating chocolate, and I didn't associate a lot of the problems I had with what I was eating. So it's not that I have no attraction for chocolate, but on the other hand, I really don't have any attraction, because when I look at it, I just see suffering. You know, so that's philosophical. In other words, if some doctor could come along and cure the problem so that I could eat chocolate without suffering, then I would immediately want to eat it again. You know, I'm looking at the chocolate and seeing suffering rather than seeing chocolate. And so it's a philosophical detachment. And that's okay, you know, but the philosophical detachment, the Gyan Yoga, it's not stable. Avasuddha Buddhya, those who have their liberation through Gyan, it's not a fully purified intelligence, because I'm not detached from the concept of enjoying separately from Krishna. I'm just detached from stomach aches. Does that make sense? You know, you're seeing it and just saying, wow, you know, that's not going to be a very good situation. I'm going to end up suffering in that situation. So there's not a feeling of attraction to the thing. You know, but that is
so from the heart where it bhakti is more prominent than the gyan.
By cultivating a positive attachment to Krishna.
Well, you follow the rules and you kind of hope that those things will automatically produce it. You know, I don't know if there's some...
Well, the rules provide a framework. You know, like, Prabhupada talks about he gives us an analogy that when he was growing up and raising his children, the way people got married was that when the boy and the girl were both very young, the family would arrange an introduction, and the young boy and girl would get together with the family there, and the family would have a tray of sweets, and they'd put it in the hands of the girl, and they'd say, here, give it to your husband. So the framework was there. The family provided that framework. But still, the boy and the girl had to interact with each other in order to use the framework properly. So the rules provide a framework. But it's up to us to really meditate on Krishna. I mean, Krishna is giving us, in the Gita and the Bhagavatam, Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many ways in which we can meditate on him. And it shouldn't be just a philosophical meditation. I'm going to meditate on the Lord who's the oldest. It should be a meditation with the emotion. And Srila Prabhupada speaks about this with the verse Maya Shaktamana Partha, Bhagavad Gita 7.1. And he gives a very nice class in Sanan, India, to primarily non-devotees, where he says, we already know how to be attached. I mean, come on, we know how to cultivate an attachment to an animal. We all know how to do that. We all know how to become attached to a dog or to a cat or somewhere, to a horse or a cow or something like that. We know how to cultivate an attachment to an object. I mean, I have some emotional attachment to the paraphernalia that I use in my life, to my phone, to my computer, you know, to my tape recorder, to my glasses, to my pen even. I have a nice pen here. So we have some emotional attachment. I mean, it's not just philosophical. Oh, it's a pen that writes easily, and I feel some emotional satisfaction when I'm using the pen. My God, you know, it's just a piece of plastic, rubber, I mean. And yet I can feel some emotional attachment to it. Why? How do I do that? How do I do that? How do I feel, what is the process that I'm doing that has me feel some emotional attachment to my phone? I mean, I actually do. If my phone were to get broken or to get stolen or to get lost or damaged, I would feel emotional distress. I would. And I feel some emotional pleasure in dealing with this. How do I do that? And to take that same method and apply it to Krishna. You know, I personally find it very easy to do that with Leela. So, you know, we all have experience of being emotionally involved in stories. I'm sure we've all read books of stories and seen films of stories, you know, heard someone's stories when we became emotionally involved. So to go into Krishna's story is not into as a philosophical exercise or just to memorize the plot details. But, you know, how are they feeling? How are they feeling? What are they experiencing? And to really, I mean, how did Vasudeva feel being in Mathura? You know, Vasudeva's in Mathura with Devaki. And all his other wives were in Vrindavan. And then his children were in Vrindavan, Krishna and Balaram. He had children by the other wives. I don't know if he had had children by them at that point. That information's not given. But he may have had other children there as well. And he couldn't communicate with them very much because he didn't want to put them in danger. And this is going on for, you know, years. At least the 16 years that Krishna's in Vrindavan. And if it, you know, then he was in jail for the 8 years before that. And how was he feeling? How is Vasudeva feeling? How did Vasudeva feel when Krishna finally appears and then Krishna is, he takes, how did Vasudeva feel to take Krishna to Vrindavan and leave him at Nanda's house? And to walk away? How did he feel? So, to go into the Leela like that, and again, I personally find that a very easy way to connect with Krishna and become attached to Krishna. Also, we can meditate on Krishna's form. We can meditate on Krishna's qualities. And to really meditate on it with our emotion. And with, again, we know how to do that. If I can meditate on my phone emotionally, I'm sure that all of us have some object that we have some emotional attachment to. It might be a pair of socks. You know, I like my bean bag, for goodness sakes. It's made out of a fabric that I get in Loy Bazaar. It lasts for years. It repels dirt. I mean, I really like this bean bag. You know, so we know how to do that. This is not some secret art, how to become emotionally attached.
I think I understand. Thank you very much. And,
you are very welcome.
And of course, it seems like there's only so much on my side I can do, and then there's so much that Krishna does on his side. There's an interesting balance on how bhakti develops as far as what I can.
Yes, but Krishna's already doing everything on his side.
Can't use that one.
Can't use that one, sorry. Meh. It is easier when you're with devotees who are attached to Krishna. Okay, I actually have to get this phone call. Thank you very much, Hare Krishna.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hare Krishna.
I'm doing fine. I still don't have anything about that heater being shipped. Yeah, well, I was just looking. I just finished an online class I was teaching.